Let's Talk Crypto with Gabriel Haynes.
Gabriel Haynes is an investor in this project. This video is not financial advice and is for educational purposes only. Always make sure to do your own research before investing.
We're on with Chris, one of the founders of Badger DAO, a good friend of the Talking Crypto show. How you doing, Chris?
I'm great, my man. How are you?
I was just saying, you look well rested. You look like you've been hitting the gym. You got a little bulk on you.
A little bulk? What's a little bulk? I haven't even heard.
Look at that with guns.
Yeah, those are pretty weak, man. But thank you. I appreciate it. It's the summer. It's the summer in Canada. You get a little tan. My southern Italian skin comes to the forefront. I'm not in the winter depths of the winter anymore, so things are good.
Fantastic. Can you turn off your Discord so that
my Discord is, as you can relate, it's unbelievable.
I don't even know how to turn it off. Like, you have to shut down the computer in order to get that sound from stopping. So BadgerDAO has had a lot of changes in the past.
When did we first talk? I think it was even before Badger launched, was it not?
It was. It was in September or November. Almost a year ago now. How about that?
And now you're a celebrity and we have to book each other like months in advance. See, this is how things change, right? Like, this is what crypto will do to you.
A celebrity? I appreciate it. I'll take it. Just for reference, 9 months ago, that was our first interview, our first conversation.
Well, interesting enough, at the time, you know, before we even launched, you helped create, you know, the flow diagrams for how the vaults work. And that's how we first got synced up. And then you were just super involved in the community, which is awesome. And just, you know, part of the early contributor program, which very, you know, select few people were. So you've been a Badger from the get-go.
Well, I'm glad I was. But, you know, I feel like I mentioned, a lot has changed since. We had, probably in March or something, very high. There was a lot of Badger talk on Twitter. Everyone was on the Badger train. And then we had a kind of a drop off over the past couple months. And I feel like now it's picking back up steam. How has Badger changed in your mind over, I don't know, let's say 6 months?
Well, when, you know, most of CT, you know, most of crypto Twitter, when they're talking about stuff, is because there's price. It's all, a lot of it's price oriented, as you would know. So, you know, we don't look at, you know, a lot of the conversation around Badger during that time is like an indication of, you know, the high and the low of the actual ability to deliver product, to build a community and like work towards our bigger vision. That's just a process of like market cycles and stuff. And we try as much as possible to kind of close our ears to that, because, you know, we're trying to build something for the long term here. When I say we, I mean the community, right? And that's what I'd say. Over the last 6 months or so, the community has just gotten so much stronger. There's just people involved today that weren't involved, you know, let's call it, you know, 6-7 months ago, that are contributing in ways that have shaped Badger and changed our product direction, our communication style, our overall vision of the future, more than like, you know, me or anyone that was there from the early days could have even imagined. And that's been, you know, that's been probably the biggest thing, is like I continue to say just how amazing our community is. And they're just so involved, like so involved. And we've grown, you know, I'd say, you know, when we first started and you were there, you know, a lot of it was like me just sharing a bunch of ideas around like how the token structure should be in the products. And then an initial cohort of community members got involved and they started helping shape that. A lot of that then kind of transitioned away as the activity in the market, a lot of attention, a lot of that type of stuff. The team got a little more close-knit, working on stuff and then bringing them to the community. And that was very different from how we started and also where we wanted to go. So, you know, during the, you know, the market downturn over the last 4 or 5 months or whatever it was, you know, we restructured how not only we bring people into Badger, what our product focus is, but the most important thing is how we include the community at every step of the decision-making process, so we can have them help shape what they want to get out of it, which we always used to do. But, you know, as pressure mounts, we kind of went a little more to ourselves. But that's changed a lot. And with that has come a lot of changes that the community obviously loves because they help help shape, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, building community is obviously key. I think that community is what makes a project at the end of the day, but we have this natural flow. And I think Andre brought it up, maybe you had a conversation with him, I don't know, a few months ago, but you have this situation when a project launches, there's many problems to solve and many people feel like they can get involved and help solve those problems. As a project matures, there's less problems and you have more of a set problem set, not like everything, right? And there's just a fewer people that, you know, show up every day and contribute. So then it turns into this kind of core team. And then people feel like, oh, it's like there's a citadel and, you know, you can't breach that. So it is difficult to find that balance, just from what I've observed.
Yeah, dude, it's really hard. Like building decentralized and open organizations is a total green space. And it's very, very difficult. And we've seen it through a bunch of examples, you know, Yearn and Sushi and us, like, you know, once you get over that 6 month hump, you know, it makes you want to question and ask, like, how do you become more inclusive? And all I know is, like, we doubled down on that, especially over the last 3 months. Like, we introduced our request for feedback kind of process. So whenever there's a new model or any type of kind of fundamental decision, obviously, if it's like an example of a few of them, tokenomics, governance 2.0, introducing a boost system, including NFTs and how you get APY boost in the app, all these different things, you know, the team may help design a framework and bring some community members for that initial draft, but then we start an RFF. We start a request for feedback Discord channel. We have a huge, you know, community conversation over multiple weeks. We host events in between that, office hours, town hall, different dedicated events to have everyone actually talk about this. And this is well before there's even an improvement proposal, right? Like a bit. So then that all happens. And then we take it to the forum. And then when we take it to the forum, you know, the community is already given their opinion and really helped shape how this should look. And then from there, moving to an improvement proposal, everyone's on the same page and we're able to push it through more effectively with everyone's support versus before it would be come up with an idea, bring it to an improvement proposal or put it to the forum. And then everyone's just learning about it for the first time. And like, well, what the fuck, what about this? You gotta change this, I don't agree with this. We only can say so much, right? If you're stuck in this like 1 or 2 day window. And then eventually they're just like, I'm not even gonna bother voting or getting involved if things just keep going over my head and they actually don't want our inclusiveness. So that's, that major shift for us has been huge and has really helped build this alignment amongst the community that we had in the early days. And it's super fired up because of that, you know, our team has grown a ton because these people are coming from the community more so. Like everyone comes from the community that works at Badger, of course, but like people are more willing to come. One, because they feel like they've developed a relationship with different people on the team through these activities, but they also feel like they'll actually have an ability to add value and have impact. So that's something that we've seen happen as well.
Are you happy with the progress?
I'm ecstatic. You know, I was saying to Jintao on who's these are front end. I was talking to him on a call yesterday, and it was like if someone had a gun to my head last year at this time, and you know, where is Badger going to be at this time this year, and all the crazy cool stuff and innovative stuff we're doing, I wouldn't been able to tell you no matter what. Like that's how much things have progressed and people that are exponentially smarter than me are involved every day and doing things that I could have never dreamed of being able to accomplish myself, nor with, you know, a team that I tried to pull together, right? So I honestly couldn't be happier. I couldn't be happier around, you know, our direction. I feel like in the early days, we were obviously the mission, bring Bitcoin to DeFi, would never change. But, you know, call it February, March, we were thinking about doing a bunch of just like making it kind of like the dApp for anything Bitcoin oriented. We're now, we have a much more singular focus and a better North Star of, you know, we want to be the most trusted place to earn interest on your Bitcoin. One click in a few seconds. We want to be able to bring that service to millions of people while they still maintain, you know, they still maintain custody of their assets. They know exactly how their Bitcoin's being put to work at every second, and they have influence and control around the product and business that they're using every day. And that's, you know, that's the focus. And how do we make that a reality? Which is a little bit of a shift from, you know, where we were, but, you know, incrementally, we're now starting to do those things. You know, our bridges are getting better and we're going to more chains and the process is more seamless so people can actually bring it there. We're introducing new vaults and new yield strategies to bring sustainable APY. Interest-bearing Bitcoin is growing in liquidity and utility, which is like that swap to earn, the easiest on-ramp for anybody that wants to get into DeFi. So we're making progress, and that direction gets me super fired up.
How has that vision changed? I mean, you kind of just told me, but I want to understand, like, you know, when it was at the beginning, it was bringing Bitcoin to DeFi, trying to incentivize people to swap, you know, to WBTC. And it's morphed into more of we're a trusted solution for your Bitcoin, I mean, or for your wrapped Bitcoin. It's kind of the same, kind of similar, but maybe, you know, bring that home for me, you know, kind of nail that down if you could.
The mission's the same, bring Bitcoin to DeFi. That hasn't changed at all. But the utility and products and the direction of those products has changed a bit, right? Like when we first started, it was just our vaults and people would be able to deposit different flavors of already tokenized Bitcoin to earn interest through our different smart contract-based strategies. Then we introduced, obviously, DIG, which is, you know, a synthetic rebasing Bitcoin, you know, experiment to try and create different synthetic assets around Bitcoin on different chains. Then introducing the Badger Bridge, which allows you to bring Bitcoin to ETH and eventually other chains, which we've almost had $300 million worth of Bitcoin go through that bridge in the last 4 months. And then interest-bearing Bitcoin, which is, you know, the most composable Bitcoin that you could potentially use on every chain, and also the easiest on-ramp. So those products together speak specifically to that mission. I think the change is, you know, before we were thinking about a variety of things like a stablecoin backed by Bitcoin, Bitcoin-oriented DEX, a variety of different stuff. And they were all disparate of one another. They were relatively fragmented, where now everything that we do works together. Right? Like, you know, interest-bearing Bitcoin is backed by our vaults. Our vaults, obviously, we need to continue to bring those vaults to other chains and get new yield strategies, which increases the underlying APY on interest-bearing Bitcoin and makes it a better synthetic Bitcoin, coupled with the bridge, which allows people to actually go from Bitcoin either into our vaults or in interest-bearing Bitcoin. If we didn't have that bridge on multiple chains, you'd be seeing, you know, you'd be kind of stuck only going to ETH and then having going there. So as we make, you know, systematic changes to each of these products, eventually it comes to a head and it becomes more of a UX conversation on like, how do you just make it a seamless one-click experience if all of the infrastructure under the hood has the ability to actually accomplish that, right? Where users don't need to know which chain's being bridged to, which wrapped token Bitcoin it's in, you know, choosing which vaults to put it in, maximize this, maximize that. It's really just that deposit and earn.
Yeah. That was my understanding, that what Badger wanted to do from the beginning. Basically, one click, you got Bitcoin, then it's earning you some interest. That's pretty much it. But yeah, I definitely understand. How hard is it to deploy on other chains? I mean, is it quite a difficult lift, or?
Yeah, it's a lift. So we took our first. So one, we're really almost exclusively looking at EVM compatible chains. One, anything that's not EVM compatible, just definitely a bigger lift. But when we first went cross chain was with Binance, and that was our first test in the water with BSC, and the lift was much bigger than we thought. Right, you know, you need to bring the multi-sig infrastructure over there. You obviously have to bring your smart contracts over there, your bot infrastructure to, you know, run different functionalities. for harvesting and all that type of, and then the maintenance that comes with it. And then, you know, of course, you need to rely on also other apps for subgraphs, for, you know, all that stuff. So we underestimated it. It became more of a lift than we expected. And then we realized if we wanted to go to a bunch of chains, we can't do it the way that we did it on BSC, right? We also wanted to bring our Badger tree because there also has been a shift in, you know, how we optimize rewards for users. So if you're familiar, we have a product called the Badger tree, and that's what enables us to distribute, you know, Badger tokens, Dig, Sushi, Convent, a variety of different tokens to our users versus what people are usually used to, where you go like a synthetic space smart contract, staking contract, and you just stake into there and it gives you a token back based on certain parameters over a period of time. That's not what we have. So our tree is a much bigger lift, and it's how it runs our entire emissions infrastructure. And for us, we made the shift about 3 months ago to be a partner first, with our vault strategies. What that means is like, we don't just farm and dump tokens that we earn. Instead, we optimize those returns for users and to distribute those optimized tokens back to them. As an example is Sushi. Instead of taking that sushi that we earn when you deposit your SOP and us selling that sushi and giving you back, you know, more in the SOP position, we actually take that sushi, stake it for X sushi, distribute that X sushi to the users. So they're getting more out of it. We're supporting the sushi protocol. It's a more symbiotic relationship. And we're now doing that with all of our vaults, including Curve and Convex. And with that, you know, we need the infrastructure to distribute those tokens to the users, which we couldn't do if we just brought, again, a standard staking contract there. So with that, and with, you know, what we've learned, we're now almost in a position where, you know, we can launch on any chain in, you know, a few days. So we're actually getting ready to launch on Polygon on Tuesday. Nothing flashy. We're really just getting there, and then subsequently Arbitrum, and then a variety of other chains to follow. Really for the purpose, again, of just enabling users that want to earn interest on Bitcoin, wherever there's interest opportunities, to take advantage of that, and then to build the underpinning so eventually we can consolidate it into a seamless experience.
Yeah, the reason I bring it up is because there's been a lot of talk about AVAX Avalanche this week. So I'm curious, just like, you know, how hard is it to deploy? Let's say AVAX is launching, we want to deploy. I mean, I guess you have some preparation. It's been around since for a year. It's not like it's new, but the curiosity is, what generates you more income? Is it better to, let's say, deploy your vaults to Convex or to launch on a new chain? I mean, what generates more fees, you know, marginally? I don't know.
Yeah, it depends, Gabe. Like, it depends on how long those yield opportunities last. If they dry up relatively quickly, and for us, it's about being able to optimize yield for users with our dApp, then you kind of lose out, right? It's kind of a flash in the pan. Maybe you make, you know, the protocol makes maybe a couple hundred grand or whatever, but is it really worth, is the risk and reward there, not risk, but just effort and reward there even worth it? So, you know, we're relatively picky on which chains we want to go to. At the same time, you know, with interest-bearing Bitcoin, which for anybody that, you know, doesn't know about it and that's listening, interest-bearing Bitcoin is backed one-to-one by any Bitcoin that's earning interest in our vaults on Ethereum. So we subsequently can bring interest-bearing Bitcoin to other chains without launching our vaults, and it's simply just another standard token that's being bridged there. And if there's certain things there, that's very valuable to Badger, because every dollar in interest-bearing Bitcoin is essentially a dollar locked in our vaults on ETH earning interest. So that's been kind of our first four-way cross-chain. And as it relates to Avalanche, we most certainly are going to be bringing interest-bearing Bitcoin there. And it starts with that. And then based on, you know, how we see that demand pick up, you know, we'll bring our vaults there kind of shortly after. So right now, interest-bearing Bitcoin's on Polygon and Solana. And I think, you know, close to 40% of the entire circulating supply of interest-bearing Bitcoin is living off of Ethereum right now, which is pretty cool. So I'm going to continue to push towards that as well.
One of the things that most impressed me about Badger is marketing. I think you come from a marketing background as well. What are some of the innovations in marketing that you've been pushing, like some of the initiatives? Curious to learn more.
From a marketing standpoint, well, I never really thought about it from a marketing exercise. Like, obviously, how you capture people's attention is important. But I've always looked at it like, you know, if you're genuinely going to be a community-run business or organization, people can call it a DAO, people call it whatever, but if you're going to be that type of business, you need to have community members that share in the same values. And if you can't attract those types of people, you're going to find yourself in trouble. So for us, it was really about how do we identify those types of people, which we did originally with our airdrop, by identifying different types of activities that people have taken over the last couple of years, and then dropping tokens to them and then having them participate in the community. But then it's grown to be like, you know, the actions that happen every day, you know, the transparency, the communityness, the pushing towards continued innovation. Like, these are the types of things that have continued to attract people. Gamification, we've done a lot of gamification activities around NFTs, around having to qualify for different drops and get into different vaults and all this type of stuff. But from a marketing perspective, in understanding our space today being very advanced user focused, to which, you know, users want a trusted place to earn a high return, especially when using ADAPT, but they also want to be around other people that they'd like to be around, although virtually. If you keep those things on the head and you can identify a way to get in front of these people, which is not hard because our space is very small, and do it with a high level of integrity and actually stick to what you suggest you're sticking to, like, you know, no BS, right? Like, if you're actually going to be open and transparent, like, you do that. And those types of people over time will continue to be interested in being involved and supporting you and pushing things forward. And, you know, Badger's fuck all without its unbelievably tight-knit community, right? Everything that's happened is because of them. And it'll continue to be because it's their business.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm with you 100%. You mentioned NFTs. You see this behind me. Do you know what proof of beauty is?
I do not. Tell me.
So proof of beauty is this NFT project where you basically mint an NFT and it's based on the transaction. So you put in the transaction that you want to mint and it generates based on all the different properties, what token was sent, how much gas was used, time, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so this proof of beauty here is the BadgerDAO Genesis transaction minted. Whoa. NFT. How about that?
Wow. Dude, you got to send me the link for this. That is super cool.
I will send you. It was pretty cool. I also minted Mark Cuban's first transaction. So I got that in my collection here. But you guys were innovating on this, on the NFT DeFi front, and NFTs have become a lot bigger than when we were speaking, I think. And I'm curious what you're thinking of the NFT space, and like, maybe just, you know, remind me about some of the NFTs you've already done and like, what are you gonna do going forward?
And I've always been a big proponent for NFTs, right? The team always bugs me because, you know, back in December, I was like screaming from the rooftop, like how NFTs and DeFi are going to collide and how we need to give utility to NFTs and have it in our app and how that's really going to be the future of DeFi apps. It's like NFTs are just going to give you perks across the entire Web3 ecosystem, right? And it's an unbelievable way of encouraging people to take actions in certain apps. It's kind of like, you know, I'm in Canada, so I'll speak to like Shoppers Optimum card, or you know, just perk cards and like how all that type of stuff works. It's not too dissimilar, and we've seen this for a really long time across Web2 apps and more of the brick and mortar type space. It's like incentivizing people to continue doing things in your environment that you want them to do, and have them share that, you know, with their community. But we did a couple NFT launches in December of last year, February with Meme. And then I think it was March or April, we did actually this launch, the jersey launch, where we launched this jersey. And then anyone that purchased this jersey not only got the physical item, but also got one of 200 Badger NFTs. And there's actually an improvement proposal now up on our forum, BIP64, around how NFTs are going to be used to increase the APY that you get out of your Bitcoin deposits in the Badger app. And I'm really excited about that. But nonetheless, NFTs, you know, I'll just say this, we're not done by any means with NFTs. We're actually cooking up a really exciting launch over the next month and a bit with a few really, you know, awesome partners that, you know, everyone knows. And again, for us, it's, you know, I talked a lot about the community and the value and beliefs, like, you know, being a Badger, when you're a Badger, it's pretty easy to understand, right? Like, you're relentless, you're fearless, you're small but mighty, no one can fuck with you. Like, you know, Badgers are the most fierce animals in the world. Honey Badgers, that is. And they love Bitcoin, right? That's the mascot of Bitcoin. So we want to give the ability for people to visually represent that they're part of the Badger community, that they are a Badger, and that they're fierce and mighty. And, you know, subsequently launching that with badger.com and a bunch of things that we've been cooking up, I think it's going to be fun and exciting. And again, I think there's a lot of things that need to be improved with how NFTs are distributed today, but two, how they're then utilized after, right? We're starting to get to the point where every day it's new bullshit that you mint, and it's just another cute thing. And, you know, if a bunch of CT influencers put it up, then a bunch of people go buy it, and then, you know, it's getting pretty crazy. But I think there's some innovation that can happen at a distribution level. You know, I talked about what we did when we launched the Badger token. NFTs should be doing launches like that. It avoids the problem with gas fees. It enables you to build a community around people that have taken actions in the past that align with, you know, what you want to accomplish, right? Imagine identifying people that, you know, minted a CryptoPunk, held for 3 years, or hold, you know, 15 CryptoPunks, or participated in, you know, Penguins and Bored Apes and VFriends and a bunch of different things. Like, you're identifying people based on their actions that dramatically increases the likelihood of them being an active community member, which you need to actually run this type of business and or ensure your NFT has the longevity. But then on top of that, like, after you have the NFT, sure, profile pic's cool, but there needs to be real utility there. Because if you don't have utility, you know, it's going to be hard to sustain that level of attention and have people, unless it's more art oriented, have them, you know, want to hold that for an extended period of time. Importantly, just continue to like the NFT that they purchase. So I think DeFi and NFTs are just going to be this, like, massive, massive collision, Web3 apps in general, and how NFTs are leveraged for gamification and for giving you certain access and perks to different apps. And, you know, we're going to try and push the boundaries there and be able to bring that to light.
Right now, it feels like DeFi has been a little bit overshadowed by NFTs.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, it's just crypto talk, right? Like, that's just what it is. I mean, it's just a Twitter crypto talk. Like, it's, it's definitely garnered a lot of attention. If you're looking at how many things are being talked about on Twitter, but, you know, in the end of the day, DeFi, and I'm not trying to, you know, downplay NFTs. I'm a big proponent for NFTs. I think they have a massive, massive, massive market in front of them. They're going to be an unbelievable on-ramp for people into crypto in general, getting people to use MetaMask for the first time and use ETH for the first time. And, like, it's going to be massive. You know, but DeFi is a much bigger mission, right? We're trying to create an entirely new financial system that's borderless, as peer-to-peer. And that inherently then translates to currencies and how money moves and all that type of stuff. So, you know, if we're looking at what people on Twitter are talking about or the price of tokens, sure, NFTs, you know, are on fire right now, and rightfully so, they're really cool. But, you know, there's no denying that even if you look at the entire cryptocurrency space and you look at different tokens and projects, you know, DeFi projects are by far the most fundamental projects that exist, right? Like they generate revenue, they have sustainable users, they have real business models and profit models, like they have actual treasuries. They're not just like some bullshit cryptocurrency that no one uses. Marketing hype crap. So I think, you know, DeFi is going to have many a times in the limelight, as it should. And I think it's going to be the future of finance, obviously. But the collision of NFTs and DeFi is also going to be really amazing. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, definitely NFTs have a lot more appeal just to a mass audience because it's just a picture, it looks nice. DeFi is, you have to have very specific interests if you're going to get into DeFi, especially at this early stage. NFTs is like, oh, this penguin looks cute. Let's buy.
So, yeah, like this penguin is cute. I can flex on Twitter and I can make some money. Like, versus DeFi, like if you look at DeFi, right, like and just people putting digital assets to work, you know, you got people that don't have Bitcoin or crypto at all. You got people that have it but don't hold their own keys and they just bought it on Coinbase or whatever. Then you got people that decided to own their own keys but they're not putting it to work. Then you got people that own their own keys and decide to put it to work. And that is really the only bucket of DeFi right now. Versus where if you're looking at NFTs, it's people over here that, you know, like digital art or wanna, you know, get a cool profile pic or whatever, and then just go through the process of getting it, skip that hole in between, right? They don't care in many instances about all those other layers. And one that makes the on-ramp great, and I think it's gonna bring a lot of people into the space, which is phenomenal. But at the same time, you know, it definitely makes it easier to digest. And that's where, again, I keep beating the horse, you know, on the head. It's like, you know, if people have a bunch of NFTs and then someone starts saying, hey, you also have some ETH, obviously, you know, why don't you earn some interest on that ETH? Oh, and you can get more on your ETH interest if you hold these NFTs. It's like it's a convergence of those that started on the NFT side coming to DeFi, those that started on DeFi and going the other way.
Yeah. It's so interesting because the DeFi NFT integration is not there. I mean, we only thing we have right now, which is just getting popular, is the fractions, which is kind of a DeFi idea, right? It's tokens on top of the NFTs, but we don't have lending. There's no options. There's liquid markets for floor prices. It's kind of, but there's so much more that can be done. I mean, just what Badger wants to do is just boosts for community members. That's cool. And then I feel like there's the possibilities are endless just getting started.
Yeah, they're just getting started, man. It's just going to bleed right over. It's just a no-brainer. The infrastructure didn't exist before for lending and borrowing and all this type of stuff. But, you know, with liquidity and with market capitalization increasing in NFTs, it's just a no-brainer. It's just another asset or token. And if it meets that criteria where there's enough demand and supply, then it's going to work. And it will work. Speaking of fractional, shout out to Andy because he's the man. Andy actually helped design the original smart contract or scripts for the Badger airdrop, funny enough, but neither here nor there. I'm a big fan of fractional. Fractional is great. I think that's a way of really distributing NFTs to the greater masses. You know, as part of what I mentioned earlier, I think NFT launches should include fractionalization in the core of their launch. And, you know, that's something that, you know, we're thinking about doing as I spoke to. You know, if you're looking to attract a larger audience, and you're looking to attract people that have taken a variety of different actions, what better way to engage those types of people rather than just giving them a NFT? Why not fractionalize a bunch of one-of-ones and then distribute those to those people and engage them in your ecosystem that way? Give them skin in the game. It's not too different from, you know, claiming your whatever it was, 400 uni airdrop, right? Like it was, you know, hey, at the time it was $1,000 and then it was 20,000, whatever it ends up being, right? But like if people can tie, if there's a way and there's a utility to drive monetary value, regardless of if it's a NFT or 1/100th of an NFT, you're going to be able to capture that type of attention if you're able to identify the right person, which, you know, hence blockchain, you can. Looking at different wallet actions and what's been done previously.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I wonder what's more powerful, built like it's like you have a community built around one NFT or a community built around a collection of NFTs. It's slightly different. I'm not sure how the communities would behave differently, but it was definitely interesting.
I think it's a mix, right? Like say, you know, at least what we're thinking about, say there's a collection with 20,000 NFTs or, you know, of course, 21,000 NFTs. You know, you have a variety of different rarity and a rarity scale, and you have one of ones, you have one of 20s, you have one of 100s. Like, I feel like Parallel did a really good job at, you know, just breaking down different editions, bringing in the idea of creating sets or, collections of sets around certain types of their different cards. But nonetheless, if you have a mix of one of ones and, you know, one of 100s or one of 1000s or whatever, you know, you don't need to fractionalize them all. You fractionalize the more rare ones to distribute them further. And inherently those rare ones will have a higher market capitalization naturally if you're able to, you know, build a community around the non-fractionalized ones. And then from there, you know, that's how the communities converge, right? And then you can build different type of utility for those fractionalized owners. It doesn't need to be one fraction. Maybe the utility is only unlocked if you own 20% of, you know, that one NFT or 15% or whatever it may be.
It's really cool. I love that idea. I don't know if you have a good answer to this, but what's the craziest NFT DeFi integration you've dreamed up of?
Dreamed up?
Thought of.
My wife would get mad at me if I'm sitting in bed dreaming of NFT DeFi integrations, although I am.
I know
you are. This is what's sick, right? You know I am. This is what's sick, right? Like when you're in, you're in. There's nothing else. It's like hypervision. What's the craziest integration? I really love the idea of, and I know Arcex is doing something similar, but like this DeFi passport, where you have like the actions that you've taken in all of your favorite apps, then give you perks into those given apps. So for example, if I have an NFT that's also really cool and a good piece of art, whatever, right? Doesn't necessarily have to just be an ugly NFT because it's a utility-driven NFT. It could have the aesthetic plus the utility. But if you have an NFT that Sushi Curve and Uniswap and Badger and Yearn also and Aave and Compound say, here are the perks that you get if you hold this NFT, it's no different. And again, I'm going to use a Canadian reference here, but like, you know, Shoppers Drug Mart, which is like the Rexall of Canada, you know, collaborated with Esso and a bunch of gas stations to launch like the Optimums card program. So no matter if you went to these different places, you always were able to carry your perks from the groceries that you bought at Shoppers or the gas that you filled up at the gas station or what you did over here and what you did over there. And it's no dissimilar, except, you know, it's obviously a completely verifiable, leveraging blockchain and those given NFTs.
Yeah, for sure. I like that. Speaking of cool NFT innovations, one I saw recently, I think Bantag tweeted about it, that developers got this NFT and they got additional membership benefits, free transactions on Polygon and stuff like that. I thought that was pretty cool.
That was super sick. Our team went crazy, man. How many of those we claimed? Everyone loved it. Like, shout out to him. That was a phenomenal idea. And again, like, it was utility and perks. And the design was super sick too. Like, you probably saw it, but like the design was really cool. And it was focused on specific actions. If you deployed a contract on Ethereum, right, which is a specific type of audience, and then it immediately isolates that benefit package. And of course, someone like Bantag has the ability to define if people would actually like that because, you know, he's a contract deploying machine. So, you know, it was phenomenal. I thought it was a great idea.
So what's the next most exciting milestone for BadgerDAO?
Next most exciting milestone. Well, I'd say the next most exciting milestone for us is driving utility for interest-bearing Bitcoin with a Curve integration. So we just announced, or we just posted our proposal yesterday that they opened up their gauge factory, along with the ability to launch pools through their factory, through their pool factory. And that's a big step for us, right? Because interest-bearing Bitcoin, the intention is to be the most dominant Bitcoin and the most usable Bitcoin across any chain. And with that, you need liquidity, and Curve is by far the best place to earn liquidity. But more importantly for us, Gabe, and this is, you know, I call this like the flywheel effect, right? Like, you know, interest-bearing Bitcoin is only good if we're able to generate yield in our vaults. If you can't create sustainable yield on your vaults with Bitcoin deposits, you'll never be able to generate, you know, substantial underlying APY on a composable and usable asset like interest-bearing Bitcoin. So how do you get that? And, you know, honestly, Curve is probably the most sustainable, you know, way to generate yield of any protocol that exists in the DeFi ecosystem today. So, you know, we have majority of our vaults are Curve and Convex strategies. What that means is you deposit Bitcoin, we take them, put them into Convex, and now we're earning Curve and Convex tokens. Instead of selling Curve and Convex, we stake them or lock them. And that obviously supports Curve, supports Convex. But what that also does, because Convex is the largest holder of V Curve in the world, it gives us the ability to have an influence on voting with that VE Curve stack. So it ensures our Bitcoin pools get higher APY and sustainable APY. And then if you have interest-bearing Bitcoin on there, and then a strategy through Badger and Convex and Curve, to which we can influence the rewards that go to interest-bearing Bitcoin. Interest-bearing Bitcoin, which again is one-to-one representation of Bitcoin in our vaults, and lock Bitcoin there, which is generating revenue for the DAO and TVL floor, all of a sudden you have this amazing flywheel, right? We have influence around those yields. Interest-bearing Bitcoin is kind of the combination of all those things, and then that in itself is driving yield. It ends up becoming, you know, the best place to earn, the best pool to earn interest on your Bitcoin is IBBTC versus WBTC or MBTC or things along those lines, while that, you know, supports Badger tremendously and enables us to like bring into a bunch of places. So that's a big milestone for us. It's been, you know, many months in the making, because we sold Curve rewards through our vaults for like 7 months, and we were the largest Bitcoin Curve LPs, and we really weren't supporting their protocol. And then since our shift, and you know, since the release of their permissionless pools and gauges, you know, we've been able to push forward, and that's going to be the start, right? Because then we'll do the same thing on Phantom and Polygon and Avalanche and Arbitrum, and you know, this the same formula there, which builds a great foundation for Badger.
The just so I know, the main difference between Yearn, which is what you were using previously, and Convex is that Convex will, instead of selling the token, they stake it and earn yield and vote and stuff like that?
Well, no, we still work with Yearn quite a bit. We actually just launched a new strategy in that WBTC vault. But it's just, you know, they're just different vaults, right? We have a Yearn vault that has like 100 million in it or something, 95 million. And then when users deposit in that vault, that goes into Yearn. And then from Yearn, that enables us to enables users to take advantage of the different strategies that they've built into that vault that, you know, different strategists contribute to, including, you know, the Badger strategists. But with the Convex vaults, which again are separate, and you could see a tag, one says Yearn, one says Convex on it. You know, we'll actually put those into Convex, and then we'll get Curve and Convex rewards. And then it's Badger's decision what we do with them. And, you know, with our partner first approach, which, you know, again, to why I'm so excited about this, and when you ask like what's the biggest milestone, is because, you know, it speaks to sustainability. And if you can't build sustainable models, both in revenue and product market fit and what the users want and stuff, like, it's not going to be easy to stick around. And that's what's key here, is like sticking around. Like, DeFi is so young, right? So for us, with these partner first strategies, you know, we become a really large LP. And if you have a really large LP in these protocols, and you know exactly what they're going to do with your rewards, because they're just smart contracts that you've been able to verify yourself, you're more inclined to incentivize those pools. Example of this is we're getting ready to launch an MStable vault, to which MStable, the DAO, loan Badger DAO a bunch of MTA rewards so we can get max boost, because they know exactly what the strategy is going to do with those rewards. And we're going to continue to see that. And what that's going to do is give us a competitive advantage in getting the best yield on Bitcoin across the industry because of our influence with other partners, but more importantly, what our smart contracts do with the rewards.
It's like, this is kind of the beauty of DeFi, right? It's the composability, not only with tokens, but within communities, right? If you do, you're by virtue of being in the Badger community, now all of a sudden you're in the Curve community and the Convex community, the MTA community, and vice versa, right? So it just makes everyone stronger in the long term.
100%. Yeah, it's just, it's one, you know, it's one big happy family. But it doesn't look like it, but we're all fighting the same fight, right? And trying to build new financial system, and you're committed to, again, similar belief system, right? Open source, peer-to-peer, like these are the types of things that align people and, you know, these protocols as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, how would you like the listeners to take action after hearing this conversation?
Just come join the Badger community, say what's up. If you have any cool ideas or you're a proponent really for anything, you have ideas around NFTs, you have ideas about DeFi, you have any ideas at all, doesn't need to be technical, could be non-technical, of course, and just come say hello and just come hang out. You know, we have a community member, his name's Vipes, in the community that by request builds a custom Badger profile pic for you. And everyone's rocking them. There's like hundreds of people in our Discord now that rock these that may or may not be an alpha leak on our NFT collection that we were talking about earlier. But nonetheless, this is what I would suggest. Come to the community, say what's up, ping me, say what's up. Everyone's there, everyone's available. Everyone's just trying to figure out, you know, how to make things better and do things together. So yeah, just join the Discord. You can see it on our Twitter handle. It's just kind of right top of the profile, and Twitter is BadgerDAO. Yeah.
All right, bada boom. Thank you very much for taking the time today. I appreciate it. And continued success with BadgerDAO.
Thank you, my friend. It was great to catch up again. It's been too long. We'll do it again soon.